Thank you for listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. My name is Jennifer Adler. I'm the host, and I'm the founder of Passionate Nutrition, a nutrition practice in the greater Puget Sound area that includes 9 offices and where we provide nutrition counseling. So over the course of the years, we've helped people with numerous conditions, whether that's weight loss or increase in energy, or if there's a health ailment that they're wanting to change their diet to help support. That's what we do at Passionate Nutrition. We are the food people. So today's show is a little bit different. For one, it will be just me. I'm not having any guests on the show today. And our topic is going to be on digestion, which is a topic that's really near and dear to my heart for so many reasons. One, working with clients over the years, it seems like over and over and over again, any type of condition that somebody's working on, often improving digestion can help. And that goes across the board. So whether we're talking about weight loss or increasing energy, skin conditions, headaches, I mean, it's really, digestion is thought to be the foundation of just about everything in the body. And if you look at any traditional form of medicine, this is something that's commonly known. So whether you're looking at the oldest forms of medicine, like Chinese medicine or Ayurveda, or old school naturopathy, regardless of what someone comes in for, you look at digestion first, because digestion is the foundation of everything. You know, if you think about it, we're eating food that gets processed, and our digestion is what makes it where we absorb the nutrients from what we eat. So, and the nutrients, that's what makes up our body. You know, that's what's making up, whether it's our bones, our immune system, our organs, our skin. That's made up of the food that we're eating, but we need our digestive system to process the food. And I know that that's something we see a lot at Passionate Nutrition, is where a client will come in and they've been eating whole foods for 20 plus years and show really strong signs of deficiency. Now, why? I mean, you might wonder, that doesn't make any sense. But what it tends to stem back to is that their digestion has been impaired. So it's not so much what we eat, but it's what we're absorbing from what we eat. And today specifically, we're going to talk about gut bacteria. And I love gut bacteria. And I'll go into great details as to why. And I think by the end of the show, you'll be excited about it too. But before I get started with that, I'll just give you a little bit of background as to how I became interested in digestion. So when I was in my early 20s, and actually prior to that, I had huge digestive issues. I had endoscopies and colonoscopies. I'd been to so many different types of doctors, from traditional MDs to the most alternative doctors that you could get. And for some reason, I just never felt like I was getting help and that things were improving. So I ended up having to take things really into my own hands for one reason or another, and ended up doing a lot of research and going outside of the box a lot with nutrition. Now, at the height of my digestive issues, I was down to about 11 foods that I could eat, and my social life was through the tubes. I mean, it was just, I don't think I had a social life through grad school, primarily because if I were to eat anything that was outside of my norm, my stomach would really blow up, and I would be in pretty excruciating pain. So that put a damper on a lot of socializing, because so much of our connection with other people revolves around food. Now, this isn't what I wanted to accept as my long-term fate. You know, I didn't want to think of my life in terms of being so limited. So I started making a lot of changes. And one of the changes that I think really made the most significant impact in my life was focusing very concretely on gut bacteria and the role that that played. And to jump ahead to now, and actually for many years now, I want you to know that I could eat pretty much anything. There's very few foods that are more whole foods that give me issues. I mean, if something is poor quality, something like that, I'll have a problem. You know, I typically will get a headache soon after eating something that's poor quality. And even that headache, it's not debilitating. It's just an awareness that comes up where I realize, I don't necessarily want to eat there again, you know, if I'm going out to eat. But other than that, my life, my digestion, things are really great. And to come from where I was to where I am now is pretty remarkable. And what I like about this is I think it really illustrates the resiliency of our digestive system. I mean, how amazing it is, and the resiliency of our body. You know, our bodies are always striving towards health. You know, our bodies are never out to sabotage us or they don't want disease. You know, they're doing everything that they can to help us to be our vibrant best. So, you know, if we give our body the nutrients, if we give our body the building blocks of what it needs, it can really do miracles. Now, with today's show, especially, I don't have a guest, and just in general, I want you to know I love callers. You know, so anytime you have questions or stories or things you'd like to share, please call in. And our number is 425-373-5527 or toll-free in Western Washington, 888-298-KKNW. That's 5569. And this venue of radio is very different for me. You know, I'm very used to having feedback. You know, I will meet with clients and I'm seeing their faces, I'm hearing their questions. The same thing with students, or even when I speak at large conferences. Unless the lighting is too high where I can't see the audience, I'm almost always getting feedback. You know, I'm seeing faces, I'm getting questions, and that really inspires and motivates me. So when I say I love callers, I really mean it. So please, if you have any questions or stories, call in. I'd love to hear from you. So let's start talking about this idea of gut bacteria, which I know can sound crazy because we live in the land of antibacterial soap. You know, we're really afraid of germs. We're afraid of bacteria. You know, we live in a very sterile culture. And if we look at our gut bacteria, they number about 100 trillion. And they're living and dying right now on the surfaces of our skin, on our tongue, in our intestines. I mean, basically all over our body and inside our body, there are bacteria. And they're about 3.5 to 5 pounds. And if we actually look at the percentage of bacteria versus cells, we're only about 10% human. And the reason that is because for every human cell that we have in our body, there's about 10 resident microbes. So there's 10 times the amount of bacteria than there are cells in our body. I mean, some researchers and scientists will say that we're actually more bacteria than we are human, and we're more just a vessel for them to live and survive, which is kind of an interesting way to view the human body. But these bacteria are essential for our overall functioning. You know, if we were to sterilize our whole body, we would die instantly because we cannot live without these bacteria. And the thing about this is we think so often about our genetic information being tied in with our weight, with disease states. And if we really look at the numbers, you know, to the extent that we are bearers of genetic information, more than 99% of it is actually microbial. And it's thought, there's researchers that are calling this actually the second genome, because it has such a huge influence on our health. And some people are speculating that it has even a greater influence than the genes that we inherit from our parents. So I love this because as we continue to talk, you'll find out that there's so much that we can do to really increase this level of gut bacteria that we have. So it's a little bit humbling, I think, to think of in terms of that we have all these bacteria. And when we have a loss of diversity in our gut, you know, if we are wiping out our bacteria, especially the beneficial ones that we need, then what happens is there's a void. You know, there's an empty space that gets created, and something's going to come fill that void. And what happens is we get the wrong kind of microbes. And these are the types of microbes that can predispose us to obesity and other chronic diseases, and even some infections that people have, autoimmune diseases, even a lot of arthritis or anything that deals with inflammation, oftentimes you can trace it back to gut issues. So we're going to look at how can we install this healthy population of gut bacteria. It's also called the microbiota. And there have been studies, you know, which are very interesting. One of which has to do with fecal transplants, which I probably shouldn't bring this up at the beginning of the show because I'm sure some of you had to take a double take. Yes, I said fecal transplants. So there's more and more research about this, where what's happening is somebody who has a particular condition, whether it's C. difficile, which kills about 14,000 Americans a year, or some type of digestive issue, or even there's been research in terms of animal studies with mice. And let's go ahead and take that one. But where you have mice that have a healthy weight, you know, they appear to be digesting their food very well. And then you have mice that maybe is, you know, struggling weight-wise. So what can happen is if you take the fecal material from the plant, or excuse me, from the mice that's at a healthy weight, and you implant it into the mice that's struggling with weight, then what you see is that even though the mice are eating the same amount of food, same amount of calories, there's actually weight loss that occurs, which is very interesting. And there's even more and more research saying that actually when people get gastric bypass surgery, it's not so much the gastric bypass surgery that causes people to lose weight, but the change in the gut bacteria that occurs from the surgery, which is kind of an interesting spin on what's happening. So there's a lot of research also in humans in terms of, or I shouldn't say a lot, there's more and more happening in terms of fecal transplants where somebody, for example, does have the C. difficile, which I mentioned earlier, and they get implanted with somebody's fecal material that of somebody who has a healthy bacteria population in their gut. And the results are amazing. I mean, we're talking about immediate changes in the person's inflammation and in their digestive health, which this is just a sign in terms of how much of a difference this can make. Now, we don't offer fecal transplants at Passionate Nutrition. We deal with food. So as we go on, we'll discuss what types of foods can actually help with changing this bacteria. But before we do that, it's time to take a break. So stay with us. When we return, we'll discuss more about this idea of gut bacteria. And please remember to call in at any point throughout the show. Our call-in number is 425-373-5527. And thank you for listening.
Does losing weight feel like a never-ending battle that you just can't win? Or maybe you want to have more energy and improve your health? Well, now you can do it all, and it may be covered by your health insurance. Passionate Nutrition can help you lose weight and look and feel fantastic. It's time for a new dieting approach, not a battle, one that's sustainable, realistic, and good for you. Passionate Nutrition is a custom nutrition-based program from Seattle nutritionist and your host on Passionate Nutrition Radio, Jennifer Adler, a nationally recognized nutrition consultant for ABC TV's Nightline. Jennifer has designed a breakthrough concept in nutrition and health nutrition counseling that creates a safe, custom-tailored success plan using fresh foods in easy-to-prepare tasty meals. No gimmicks or expensive supplements. Follow-up sessions help your long-term success. 6 locations and coverage by most insurance plans. For affordable and realistic health and safe weight loss, go to PassionateNutrition.com.
Hi, I'm Martha Childress with the Natural Choice Network. Join us every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite leaders from our sustainable community to share their unique visions and valuable insights. You'll learn great tools to make your life greener, healthier, and more sustainable for generations to come. Thank you for making the natural choice. That's the Natural Choice Network every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Please join us.
There's an exciting new Astrology Hour, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silberman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silberman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilbermanAstrology.com.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Never run alone, don't go, go, go.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to Passionate Nutrition. My name is Jennifer Adler, and I'm the host and founder of Passionate Nutrition, a nutrition counseling practice with 9 locations throughout the Puget Sound area. And as a reminder, this is a call-in show, so please feel free to call in at any point. Our number is 425-373-5527. So another interesting thing about these microbes that proliferate and are a strong part of our digestive system is that they also play a critical role in training and also modulating our immune system. And the reason that is because if you think about our digestive system, it's a pretty fragile place. You know, you're eating food from the outside world. There could be anything on that. And it goes inside of our body. Whereas every place else, you know, our skin, we have it's a pretty selective membrane that it is. Whereas our digestive system is pretty vulnerable to the outside world through food. So with that, most of our immune system is actually in our gut. And these bacteria make up a big part of our immune system. And they're what are helping to accurately distinguish between friend or foe. And this also helps to decrease our reaction to potential allergens. You know, so when our gut bacteria is off, there's some researchers believe that the increase in the amount of food sensitivities and other issues that we see could be based on this lack of beneficial bacteria. Other research believe that there's an alarming increase in autoimmune diseases in the West, and much of this is thought to be due to not having enough gut bacteria. So let's just back up a minute and think, how do we develop our bacteria to begin with? So a baby, which is in utero, is in a really sterile environment. I mean, it's more or less a blank slate. And through the birthing process, so say that there's a vaginal birth, and then through breastfeeding, solid food, weaning, bacteria start to establish themselves. And they're really established by the age of 3. That's when a baby's gut comes to resemble an adult community, and much like that of its parents. So looking at how children's gut bacteria come into play is a good indicator of how this process happens. And it also helps to solve a mystery about breast milk. You know, for years, scientists were really curious as to why in breast milk there were certain types of complex carbohydrates called oligosaccharides that the human infant lacked the enzymes to digest. And when you think about breast milk, everything in there is supposed to be an essential nutrient for the baby. So what's been found and theorized is that the reason these complex carbohydrates that the baby couldn't digest were in the breast milk was actually to feed the bacteria. So even going back to breast milk, it had a huge emphasis on bacteria. So before we continue on, I want to go to Christine in Seattle. Thank you for calling Passion Nutrition Radio, Christine.
Oh, hi there. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I just wanted to call and say that I just finished a 3-week juice fast.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was that there's a lot of misconception around protein. I want to say 2 things, because I was a big, huge protein eater for years and low blood sugar and all that. And I tell you, I did not eat anything on this fast. I got plenty of protein from my fruits and vegetables, and I felt fabulous. So I just wanted to put that out there. The second thing is that I saw something today there was a report today on the internet that talked about probiotics being a really great antidepressant rather than having to take antidepressants. And I think that substantiates the theory that a lot of your moods and all that stuff come from your GI, which is your second brain. So I just wanted to comment on that, and I also wanted to get your thoughts on that. And I guess I'll take my answer off the air.
Great, thank you so much, Christine.
Thank you. Bye.
I love that you brought up this connection between the gut bacteria and moods. And there's actually a lot of research around this, and surprisingly so, about 95% of our serotonin, which that's what most antidepressants, they help to maintain in the body. They're called serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SRIs. So 95% of our serotonin production is actually done by our bacteria in our gut. So when we think about antidepressants, I mean, absolutely. There's times where they're essential, and I'm really thankful that they exist. And at the same time, it's nice to also work on building up our gut bacteria so that we're naturally producing serotonin. And I know in the Seattle area, there's a couple of really great psychologists that refer to passionate nutrition quite frequently, because what they've found is that their clients that they're putting on medications are often able to take less, lower doses of their medications the more that they change their diet. So there's a huge connection that way. And I love that idea of the second brain. And there's more and more research, and there has been for many years, about how that's actually true, that the gut bacteria is more like a second brain along with our GI system. So thank you. So going back to when we're infants and then we're producing, we're getting this establishment of gut bacteria in our body, which once again, by about the age of three, that's when it's pretty solidified. You know, this is when it starts, you know, through that birthing process. So that's why a vaginal birth, for example, it's really pretty important. Now, I know C-sections, and there's many times where there's no other alternative, but the vaginal birth is a really important part to establish this gut bacteria along with breastfeeding. But what do you do if you haven't been breastfed? I mean, I know, for example, I wasn't breastfed, and many people aren't. So we need to get these microbes from other places. Now, there are, you know, when a baby is laying on a parent and skin-to-skin exposed, that's another way that they're getting bacteria, but it's not as significant as it is from the vaginal birth and also from the breast milk. But there is some exposure that happens just in terms of physical contact. And another thing, too, is just how we are raised. You know, so living in less sterile environment, which is an interesting thing to think about because we live in a very sterile world. But there's more and more studies that people that live in rural communities or children that grow up with pets in the home actually have lower incidence of asthma and often other types of issues such as autoimmune diseases. And one of the theories behind that is that they're having more exposure to germs and bacteria and things that help to build up their population. Now, I say this, and I know that this isn't always easy in homes, but actually having a less sterile environment, you know, so trying to pick and choose your options, you know, what's really important in terms of cleanliness and what isn't as important. So this is probably a strange thing to say, but I know that in terms of the produce that I bring home, you know, that I get at the farmer's market, I very, very rarely wash it. You know, there's things like cilantro that gets a big chunk of dirt and it can be especially dirty, or the inside of leeks, you know, some spinach gets really dirty. So those are things that I definitely wash. But, you know, when it's just my everyday produce that I'm getting, I don't. And that's actually an intentional decision. Now, I should mention that no one in my house is immune compromised. You know, there's situations there where that would not be a safe thing to do. And at the same time, I have a 15-year-old at home that, due to my hygiene standards with food, he's currently protesting and not eating anything I make. He took a food safety class at school, which the interesting thing about that is that I taught food safety for years and I also taught food science for years. But you know how it is when it's your family members at home. So, you know, with that, having less of a hygienic environment, this can help to build up our immune system. Like, for example, if we've been petting the dog, you know, maybe that's not a time to wash our hands, because actually getting some of that bacteria, you know, getting some of the germs, if you will, from the dog, that could actually help to build up our own system. So, because what has been found that is in the West, we have lower levels of biodiversity. And it's thought this has to do with our sterile environment. More and more processed and packaged foods that are very void of bacteria. Also, they don't have the fiber, the things that help feed our gut bacteria. And then the other thing, too, that it's thought is that we have a low-grade use of antibiotics that happen in our food system as well as in our healthcare system. So this is something that, you know, most people growing up end up going on antibiotics multiple times throughout their childhood. And what this does when we take antibiotics, it not only kills off the bacteria that we don't want, but also the bacteria that we do want, these probiotics that we're thinking of. So we have bacteria through our healthcare system, but also another place we don't tend to think of is through our meat and our dairy in particular. You know, if you're thinking about a 1,000-plus pound cow, there's a lot of antibiotics that are given to that cow throughout the course of its life, if we're talking about, you know, feedlot meat, which is mostly what we find. Now, to think about this, it's kind of an interesting idea in terms of weight gain. Some researchers really question if antibiotics are what leads to weight gain in our culture. And the way it got started that antibiotics were given to livestock was that the people that raised livestock realized that if they gave low doses of antibiotics regularly to the livestock, that they actually gained more weight. And that's what they want. You know, they want for those animals to gain weight because that's how they make the money. You know, the more that animal weighs, the more they get paid. So it became standard practice in feedlots that the food just had low levels of antibiotics constantly given. So I know we see this a lot at Passion Nutrition. Actually, I'm thinking of a woman just recently that came in, and it was just so unexplainable. You know, why is her weight what it is, given her level of activity, you know, given what she's eating, very whole foods. And she was really, I mean, she was crying. She was at a loss. She felt so frustrated. And looking over her history, her health history, she had been on a lot of antibiotics throughout her life. And, you know, when we started talking about the role of antibiotics and how this can lead to weight gain, you know, it was just such a relief for her. I mean, because it felt like there was an explanation to something that she just didn't understand why it was happening. And I think this happens for so many people in our culture. So there's factors with that. So there's taking antibiotics in terms of food, in terms of our healthcare system. And then there's some other factors that we'll look at when we come back from our break as to why our diet that we're eating in the West can really lead to not having enough healthy bacteria and contribute to weight gain, autoimmune diseases, and other issues. So stay with us, and we'll talk more when we come back.
Passionate Nutrition offers a whole food and whole person approach to your health and wellness. Whether you're struggling with extra weight, low energy, or just want to feel your absolute best, Jennifer Adler and her Passionate Nutrition team are trained to help you every step of the way, from cooking to nutrition counseling. Located in 6 locations throughout the greater Seattle area, Passionate Nutrition has an office that's close to you. Visit PassionateNutrition.com to learn more about the nutrition services they provide, or give them a call at 206-595-0376.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Good afternoon, Seattle, and welcome to the Joper Show. I'm Joe Janot, live on Alternative Talk Radio. If you're going to have the Joper Show, you have to have On the Town with Lisa. You know, there is a lot of blogging and twittering about Seattle Sonics. I think the expansion is coming sooner than we expect. And then at the 2 o'clock hour, man, we're going to talk booze. So we brought in a cool cat from 3 Point Production to talk about the event. Talking about a documentary. There's not any documentary. Talk about hip-hop, about the vibe of Seattle, and how it sort of progressed.
We're talking food, sports, and fun every Friday, 1 to 3 here on Alternative Talk 1150 with the Jopra Show.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. I'm Jennifer Adler, your host and the founder of Passionate Nutrition, a nutrition counseling practice with 9 locations throughout the greater Puget Sound area. And just as a reminder, this is a call-in show. Our phone number is 425-373-5527. And please feel free to call in at any point throughout the show. So I just want to back up a minute and continue with the idea of factory-farmed animals getting low levels of antibiotics. Now, what researchers have hypothesized why this leads to weight gain is that the antibiotics favor certain types of bacteria that are much more efficient at breaking down carbohydrates. So what that means is that the animals are actually able to get more of the calories and more of the nutrients from what they're eating. So if we think about that in terms of our body, you know, some people say, oh, I just think about cake and I gain weight. Well, it might be that their bacteria population is such that they are able to extract more of the carbohydrates from what they're eating. And this actually could be true for them, that they gain much more weight with what they eat than maybe another family member or somebody else they know. So we talked about this gut bacteria playing a role in serotonin production. But another thing is that these bacteria also play a role in vitamins. Notably, these bacteria produce vitamin K, and also they're producing B vitamins. And the amount of B vitamins that they're creating is about a cup a day. I mean, you have to eat a lot of brown rice to get a cup of B vitamins. So it's through their birth and death and their whole life cycle that they're producing all of these vitamins. But they're also creating other essential nutrients, amino acids, short-chain fatty acids, but all of these that talk to our immune system and our metabolic system. And many of these have a role in our stress levels, our temperament. So there have been studies when gut microbes from easygoing, adventurous mice are transplanted into the guts of anxious and timid mice, they become more adventurous. And it's thought that maybe the expression thinking with your gut contains a larger kernel of truth than we thought, because of the research that's showing that our gut really does have more and more of a part to play in our overall temperament. Now, these gut microbes are looking after their own interests. I mean, one, they want to get enough food, they want to survive, and so they send a lot of signals to us that regulate our appetite and satiety and digestion. So when our gut bacteria are off, this is often when we'll see with clients that they have very strong sugar cravings, and or they'll crave a lot of carbohydrates. And this, I mean, there's many factors that can tie in. You know, in other shows, we've talked about things like protein, eating regularly throughout the day. But if there's still those cravings going on, this can often be a sign of gut bacteria imbalances. So this is where we'll start with many people. Now, with our immune system, you know, anybody that's struggling with immune functioning or autoimmune diseases or just in general getting sick all the time, for example, one of the things I would highly encourage you to do is think about your gut bacteria, because that's going to be a big part to play in when we get sick. And this can also be why, you know, two people are exposed to the same food. You know, maybe it's food that has food poisoning potential. One person gets food poisoning, the other person doesn't. You know, a big part of this could be that one person has a really strong bacterial population and the other person doesn't. Like I know for myself, an amazing thing, I went to India for 3 months, and this is after I had had huge digestive issues, been very sickly, lots of health issues. I went to India and I didn't get sick once after I'd been working on my gut. Now, it's highly unusual to go to India and not get sick, especially if you're there for 3 months, at least at some point in time. And I really attribute that to having so many digestive issues and having to really work and build up that gut flora that helped really strengthen my immune system. And so let's go to this idea of can unhappy gut bacteria make us gain weight? So one of the things around this is that the typical American diet, the Western diet that we have, it contains a lot of what we would call junk food, or foods that are shelf stable, you know, they really never go bad. And from a digestion standpoint, they don't take a lot of work to digest. You know, you eat them, you chew, the calories, everything is really readily available. So our upper digestive system is very satisfied. But there isn't the fiber. It's not very difficult to break down. So by the time we get into our lower digestive system, there's no work for it to do. So there's no food for this bacteria. There's no work for it to perform. So what that means is that when we're eating more highly processed foods like this, like what we would call junk foods, then this causes certain bacteria to flourish in our gut. Bacteria that really favors breaking down these carbohydrates, which can lead to weight gain. So foods high in fat and sugar encourage the growth of certain gut bacteria And what these do is they make a substance called endotoxin. So endotoxin is a byproduct of these bacteria that is thought to tie in very strongly with inflammation in our body. So our immune system reacts. It detects this endotoxin. It thinks we're under attack, and it triggers inflammation. So it gears our body up for a fight, and our bodies change its metabolism to redirect its energy. So this is when we can start to get things like metabolic syndrome. So metabolic syndrome is when people are really struggling with weight, especially in their midsection. You know, that's where metabolic issues tend to really show up, but just overall weight. And when our bacteria is out of whack, our metabolism is out of whack, and our body doesn't regulate energy from the food we're eating properly, it stores too much fat, it cranks out too much insulin, and it loses that ability for our body to read enough calories already. So because the hormone leptin, which usually signals satiety, it's not happening in the same way. So a way to turn this around is to go back to food. And I love this. I mean, the more simple it is, you know, like, actually, I was talking with a nurse earlier this morning and just discussing how I'm continually amazed at people that get diagnoses and medications for conditions when often it's really just a nutrient deficiency that can get corrected quickly. You know, we see that a lot in terms of B vitamins, where someone might be prescribed medications and really they're just having a B vitamin deficiency. So in this situation, when we've got metabolic issues, when we might have insulin resistance, you know, a simple yet very effective way to help turn this around is to change our diet, you know, to go back to the basics, go back to those things that are really simple. So having more of a whole foods type of diet, you know, which I know many of you listening, this is old hat, you know, thinking of whole foods, but it just can't get emphasized enough. Going back to foods that take longer to chew and therefore longer to digest, and it gives our colon, it gives our small intestines, the lower part of our digestive system, more of a workout. So what this does is this feeds the beneficial bacteria that we really want to proliferate. Now, in particular, with whole foods, you know, think about getting a variety, because the fiber in whole foods is what really feeds this bacteria. So think about having things like steel-cut oats, you know, for example, legumes, whole grains, vegetables. And anytime it's a little bit tougher and it's a little bit harder to chew, harder to digest, this is going to feed your bacteria much more. Like, for example, if you have al dente pasta, this is going to feed your gut bacteria much more than if you have pasta that's super cooked, you know, that's really cooked and it's more mushy. Or if you have steel-cut oats versus rolled oats, you know, the steel-cut oats, they take more chewing, they're a little bit harder to digest. This is going to feed your gut bacteria much more. And as a side note, these foods, not only do they help your metabolism in terms of really feeding the bacteria that help us with weight control and immune system functioning, but they take more work for our body to process. You know, when we look on a label, it gives us a number of calories. But actually, there's been research and there have been people that have petitioned to change our whole system of calories. Because what's found is, you know, foods that take more work to digest, even if they have more calories, there's more calories burned in the process of digestion. So I hope that made sense, but I'll do an example. So if you have a brownie versus a nut bar, you know, say it's nuts and dried fruit and, you know, say like a little bar. Now, the nut bar very likely has more calories than the brownie. However, the brownie is very soft. It's very easy to chew. It's very easy to digest and break down. So even though it's less calories, you know, there's not a lot of calories burned in digesting it. Whereas the nut and fruit bar, you know, it's hard, it's crunchy, it takes a lot more chewing, it takes a lot more work to digest it. Therefore, it actually burns up more calories through the digestive process, and overall, the net effect of calories is lower. Now, this has been, this would be way too complicated in order to change in the way we look at calories. So even though there's been many petitions to change the labeling, it's likely not going to happen soon because it changes our whole model. But just in general, there's so many positives to something that takes longer to chew. You know, you're feeding that gut bacteria and, you know, you're burning more calories through the whole digestive process. So focusing more on whole foods, you know, things that you would get at your farmer's market, things that you have to prepare. You know, the way you can tell a whole food is that it's not coming in a box or a bag. You know, it's something that you can visualize growing in nature. You know, you can visualize an apple tree or a chicken laying an egg, you know, or some spinach growing, but you can't visualize a donut bush. Well, you can visualize it, but it's probably not going to happen. So think about things that you can see growing in nature, and that's a really good sign that that's a whole foods and something you want to consume for many reasons, but what we're talking about today is for your gut bacteria. So it's time for us to take another break, but when we come back, we'll continue talking about changes you can make in your diet and your lifestyle to support this bacteria. Stay with us. Research shows that every parent's concerns about their kids' well-being, from good nutrition to obesity to achievements in school, can be drastically improved by simply eating and chatting around the dinner table. But with mealtime tantrums, conflicting schedules, force feedings, and short-order cooking, this task can seem daunting. Passionate Nutrition offers private consulting and individually tailored nutrition coaching that is often covered by insurance to help your children cultivate a healthy relationship with food that will set them up for lifelong healthy eating. Learn simple tips to nourish your children with balanced, creative, sustainable meal ideas. Our nutritionists can help clarify misinformation about food to reduce the anxiety surrounding meals so that families can connect at mealtimes instead of waging all-out war at the dinner table. For more information, go to PassionateNutrition.com.
What's the deadliest of the gynecologic cancers? No, it's not cervical or breast cancer. It's ovarian cancer. Hi, I'm Gary Shipe, and every week on Spotlight, we bring you compelling conversation with local leaders. While survival rates of other women's cancers like breast and cervical cancer have increased dramatically in recent years, the incidence and mortality of ovarian cancer has remained unchanged in 50 years. Seattle's Marsha Rivkin Center for Ovarian Cancer Research is on the forefront of combating this silent killer. Join me to learn more on Spotlight, Sunday mornings at 5 on Alternative Talk, AM 1150, KKNW.
We live in a world that's become predictable. Our realities are filled with distractions, hopelessness, and confusion. We've begun to lose touch of what we're truly capable of. It's time for us to regain our true potential. Join psychic medium and crystal child, Lindsay Paul, as she connects to the other side and brings back messages from beyond, along with her psychic and skeptic, Abraham DeWeese, and Indigo Child, Sarah Ellis. They'll help you soar to new heights by answering your questions. Don't miss Wisdom Within Radio, Thursdays at 1 p.m.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
Welcome back. You're listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. I'm Jennifer Adler, your host and the founder of Passionate Nutrition, a nutrition practice in the Pacific Northwest that has 9 locations. And just as a reminder, this is a call-in show, so please feel free to call in at any point. Our number is 425-373-5527. So we talked previously about antibiotics that we receive, and just a statistic, children in the West receive on average between 10 and 20 courses of antibiotics before they turn 18. And so when you couple that with the antibiotic residues in meat, milk, and also things like the tap water or surface water that we have, this can lead to a lot of antibiotics. And then we have chlorine washes for lettuce, hand sanitizers. You know, we're using all of these things because they're antimicrobial and they do us some good. But also there's that question of what are they doing to our gut bacteria? So I just want to say no one's questioning the value of antibiotics to civilization. I mean, they've helped us to conquer infectious disease and increased our life expectancy. But as in any war, the war on bacteria, it really seems like it's had some unintended consequences. Now, over and over again, people keep hearing about inflammation, and there's a growing number of medical research that's coming up with the idea of a common denominator in terms of most chronic disease, which is inflammation. And there's a lot of markers for inflammation that comes up with metabolic syndrome that we were talking about earlier that leads to weight gain. And these are things that lead to cardiovascular disease, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and even perhaps cancer. So one of the things, a theory, is that inflammation goes back, it begins in the gut, specifically with gut bacteria. And, you know, that lining that we have in our digestive tract. And the way you can think of it is kind of like an internal skin. And the surface area of this internal skin is large enough to cover a tennis court. And this is what mediates our relationship to the world outside, our bodies, because more than 50 tons of food pass through our digestive system in our lifetime. So looking at this gut bacteria and the role it plays with inflammation is huge. So if this gut bacteria isn't properly nourished, it makes it where that barrier internally, the walls of our digestive system, are more permeable. And this can lead to byproducts of certain bacteria that are problematic, like the endotoxins that we were talking about earlier. And then proteins slip into the bloodstream, causing the body's immune system to mount a response. And then the result is you get low-grade inflammation, which affects the entire body, and which can lead to metabolic syndrome, chronic diseases, weight gain, many of the things that we're talking about. And so there's been research that when animal studies, when the animals are fed high-fat junk food, like what we were talking about, then the microbes in their gut changes so like it does in humans on a fast food diet, which then leads to a more permeable gut barrier and low-grade inflammation that can lead to this metabolic syndrome that leads to weight gain. So gut bacteria initiates the inflammatory process associated with obesity and insulin resistance by really increasing this gut permeability. So once again, it comes back to the gut. It comes back to really creating a healthy environment for it to live in. Now, we talked about including more whole foods in our diet. We've also talked about being less stringent in our hygiene, you know, our hygiene in foods, our hygiene in our environment, you know, having pets, getting in the dirt, having exposure to dirt, letting our kids get in the dirt. I mean, this helps to build up their systems. And then also I would think about, you know, while antibiotics can be absolutely essential, being really thoughtful as to when you want to use antibiotics and when you don't. And you and your doctor, you know, making a very conscious decision. Now, there's another thing in terms of diet, but first I want to go to Alice in North Seattle. Alice, thank you for calling Passion Nutrition Radio.
Hi. For not washing some of the vegetables, I know you're not saying do this, but if we're interested in trying that, does that only apply to the organic? Because in stretching the dollars, I look at that clean 15, you know.
Right.
And on that is cabbage and yams. So a lot of times I just get the non-organic.
That's a really good question, and I'm glad you bring it up. I would say that if you're making that decision to do less washing, I would save that for the vegetables that are organic.
Okay.
The vegetables and fruits.
Okay. Can I ask you something else?
Please.
Speaking of yams and potatoes, someone, this was several years ago, told me I don't eat the skins because there's a lot of mold between the skin and the actual like the yam, and I always wondered about that, because then on the other hand we hear all the vitamins and minerals are in the skins. So what do you think of that, or have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And just in the terms of how they are grown, there can be more mold, and also just in their storage process. Often you can see this, and I would recommend still eating the skin if you like it, because as you mentioned, there is lots of vitamins and minerals that is present in the skin. But if you notice a spot on there, if it's something that's actually visible, you know, just go ahead and
cut that off.
Yes.
But you're, again, only with the organic ones?
Would you eat the skin?
When we get the yam is part of that clean 15.
Right. You know, I would go ahead and eat the skin because one of the things that gets found over and over again is when it comes to vegetables, the big thing is to get them in. So if we're looking at cancer prevention, for example, it's found that there can be a 40% reduction in cancer rates just by getting the amount of produce that is recommended. Now, the studies that have been done on this, it doesn't matter if it's organic, if it's not organic, if it's canned, if it's fresh, if it's frozen. It's really just get the vegetables in. So I love that you're eating them, whether they're organic or not. And so I would just enjoy.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. Okay, so the next thing, when we're thinking about getting this gut bacteria built up, I've saved one of the biggest things for last, even though everything we've talked about up until this point is important, fermented foods. Now, I know that we've talked about this on the show before, but specifically in terms of gut bacteria, this is a really crucial component. So what I'm referring to is foods that have been around for, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of years, because they were created before we had refrigeration. So this would be sauerkraut, kimchi, kefir, really good quality yogurt, things like kombucha and miso, and there's a lot of pickled vegetables that are coming out. So the more we can include these in our diet, this not only feeds the bacteria that we have in our digestive system, it's what's called a prebiotic, because it has the carbohydrates that these bacteria need to live off of. And it also includes the probiotics. It includes the bacteria that our body needs. So including these foods as part of our daily life can be a fabulous way to maintain that gut bacteria that we're talking about, in addition to the other things that we've covered. But including even a couple tablespoons of fermented vegetables a day can be really key. It doesn't take a lot. It's more about having consistency. Now, I don't mean every day. You know, we go away for the weekend, we go on vacation. You know, we don't have to get, overly strict with anything, but just keep them around. And the good news is they never go bad. You can keep them in your fridge. And when you come home, even if you've been gone for 2 weeks, you likely could have sauerkraut in there. So even before you get to the store to get some fresh produce, you have that available. And the key with this, as we've discussed before, is just to make sure that these foods, which include a lot of bacteria, that they come from the refrigerator section. You know, so you can get sauerkraut in the aisles, or you can get sauerkraut from the refrigerator section. If it's from the refrigerator, it's fresh, it's been fermented, and it hasn't been pasteurized. So all the bacteria, all these benefits that we're talking about are present in that vegetable. You know, whereas if we get it in the aisle, it's been pasteurized to keep it shelf stable. And so you get the benefits of the cabbage, but you don't get the bacteria. And the great news is this population in the grocery store is just booming. I mean, 2 years ago, I would have said sauerkraut and kimchi, kefir, miso, and kombucha, and that's all you could get. Now, if you go to the grocery store, for example, like PCC or Madison Market or natural food stores, you can have 5 varieties of sauerkraut, 5 varieties of kimchi. You can have fermented salsa, fermented carrots. I mean, it's really boomed. So it's something you can make on your own as well, which is quite easy to do. But at the same time, it takes a little bit of courage in terms of fermenting foods and leaving them out. So even though they can be more expensive, I would highly recommend buying some at the grocery store because they're readily available. You know, say you're having eggs in the morning, you know, you can have a couple tablespoons of kimchi with it. Maybe you're having a sandwich at lunch, add a little bit of sauerkraut. You know, if you're having a salad, put some fermented vegetables with it, or even a soup. you know, you can add some on top. The big key is you'd want to buy it from the refrigerator section and you don't want to heat it. You know, so you can add it to hot foods, but don't heat it because you'll also kill off the bacteria. So to keep the bacteria really fresh and vibrant so we can get the benefits of the probiotics in there and also the prebiotics. So that's it for our gut bacteria today. Actually, I could have many shows on this topic because I'm very passionate about it. But thank you so much for listening to Passionate Nutrition Radio. And visit us at our website, passionatenutrition.com, to find out more about our services, which most often are covered by insurance. Thank you for listening, and hope that you listen next week. Bye.
I jump up and down and hope you toss me a care.